My name's David Clark. I live in Dorset. And you want to tell me? You want me to tell you about National Service?
Yeah, what do you remember?
Well, I was 22 at the time.
What year?
Oh, 1959. And I was called up, having been deferred for 4 years, while I was doing professional examinations. I asked if I could join the Royal Engineers, because a lot of the people I worked with, they'd all been in the Royal Engineers. And they said, oh, yeah, sure you can, to my surprise. I knew I couldn't go into the Navy. I had at one time wanted to go into the Navy, but at that time, no National Service people were taken for the Navy. I was posted to the training regiment at Cove in Hampshire, where I spent something like 3 months doing basic training and trade training. That was square bashing, generally getting fit, and all the stuff that engineers do, demolitions, bridge building, watermanship, all sorts of things like that. And towards the end of the training, I got a message from the CO or 2IC saying they wanted me to go up to Yorkshire, to Ripon, taking me out of the rest of the training, and they wanted me to be a clerk, because my name is Clark. They wanted me to be a clerk, and the trade would be Clark GD. That's because my initials were Clark DG, GD being general duties. So I bundled all my stuff into my kit bag and got on the train with my free warrant, and I went from Farnborough up to Ripon. In those days, there was a train station in Ripon. Now you have to go to Harrogate or York and get other transport. But yes, got all that there. I must have arrived at about 9 o'clock in the evening, and the duty lorry came along and picked me up, and on the way we stopped at a caff and had a cup of coffee, and I felt very lonely at that time, because I got very close to a lot of people, got to know them all, having been with them all day every day for 3 months. And all of a sudden you say goodbye and you go in completely new surroundings in the dark. Anyway, I soon settled down into a 6-3 field squadron of 3-8 Corps Engineer Regiment. And what's my number? 2364-4350. There you are, there's my army number. Now that was, when would that have been? I suppose maybe just before Christmas, or just after Christmas, 1959. I was there for a short time, and then they wanted me to go down to Aldershot. I packed my bags again and went down to Aldershot for another course, and that was a course for being a clerk. So I learnt all about the work that you had to do, looking after soldiers' documents, everything that was needed to be done. And that was included shorthand typing, Pittman course on the old-fashioned typewriters. I then, having finished that and completed the course, went back up to Ripon. And there was a whole good crowd of people there I got to know. And after work, we used to go and play cards, played canasta most nights.
What's canasta?
Canasta is a card game. I can't remember how you played it, but we just got thoroughly hooked on it. And every night we sat on my bed and had a table in front of us, and others sat on chairs on the other side of the table. And we sat there playing until it was bedtime. Well, I suppose about 10 o'clock we'd go across to the YMCA and have a cup of tea, and and then going to bed. I did various other things other than looking after soldiers' documents. I went on, well, we had to go away on a scheme at one time, I remember, and that was up in Northumberland, Otterburn, and the whole office had to be dismantled and taken on lorries and re-erected within great big army tents. Filing cabinets, desks, chairs, beds, everything like that. And it was a really wet summer, I remember. And we just had army washing facilities, a bowl, go and collect some water in a bowl and put it on a bench and wash and shave in that. It was a warm summer, but very wet. And I distinctly remember all the curlews, because it was right out on the moors, Otterburn. Another time I volunteered to go on a trip across the channel by canoe. There was some competition between various regiments, I suppose. Anyway, the training for that started off at Ullswater in the Lake District. Now, the first night we had packed food, emergency rations, I think they were. The next morning, we went out very early for a swim in the lake and then a bit of work on rope, what do they call them now? I forget what they call them now, but anyway, we had to climb up this high tree and get onto, have two handles on a pulley wheel on a rope, and you slide down this rope. I was the first to go, and it wasn't set properly, and I ended up hitting a tree at the end, and I was concussed, and I was unconscious for most of the rest of the day. The officer in charge, he's probably only about 23 himself, he was frightened he'd killed me. next thing I woke up, I was in hospital. And I had my wrist set and put in plaster. And then I was sent back to Ripon. And, I went by train. That's right, I went by train. And I'd got my army uniform on with my arm in a sling, and I couldn't do my jacket up properly. And most uncomfortable, and trying to get money out and trying to get whatever you have to do when you're travelling. You need two hands rather than one. I got to Ripon and I rang the camp at Otterburn, and my sergeant major said no, he didn't want me up there, he didn't want any invalids. So I stayed at Ripon for the most of the summer with some other squadron. What else happened?
What about the when you first started, though, the training? Yeah. I mean, what sort of a shock was that? I mean, what sort of things did you have to do as the training?
Well, that was quite a shock, because when you join the army, you have to go along wearing normal civilian clothes, and you end up. I forget what happened, but I do remember we had to go and collect our uniform, and you queue up at this counter and they look you up and down and they say, oh, that should fit you and that should fit you. And you get a whole set of uniform, and then you have to take it to your barrack room. And you're marched, but of course you haven't been trained how to march, but you have to go in ranks of three. You get to your billet. I'd collected my uniform. The first night, there were two corporals, training corporals, and they run you around and making it really difficult for you. And they tell you, the next morning you've got to have your uniform on, and then you'd be inspected. And as the days went by, you had to get the uniform pressed and looking smart. And you had to get all the roughness off the brass buckles and smoothed them down with emery cloth and bluebell and dusters, and the boots were all pimply and they had to be polished highly with cherry blossom boot polish. All the bumps had to be smoothed out with a heated spoon, heated over a candle, and you smooth it all out. And and we had a jackknife as well. That had to be highly polished, and the rivets on this jackknife had to be smooth. And some people, they smoothed them out to such an extent the whole knife fell apart because the rivets had been filed down to be shiny. But it was very, very, it was a great shock to most people. There was one person there who just couldn't hack it at all. And he looked as, he was a little shrimp of a guy, and he just wanted to be in the army, and I don't think the army wanted him. He made such a mess of everything. In the end, he was told to go. They didn't want him. And he was probably quite intelligent, and he decided that's the way he's going to avoid national service. I quite enjoyed it. I mean, there was lots of good fun. But 2 years seemed to be a long time when you first started. I mean, if you look now back at 2 years, it's gone in a flash. But when you're doing national service, and you just look forward to the date when you have to go out, and especially a lot of people who were married, they were very upset leaving their young wives, and they'd go home at weekends. They might travel hundreds of miles to go and see their wife and then come back again, or fiance or girlfriend. I didn't have that stress. Weekends came. We've had to work actually on Saturday morning involved square bashing. We had to get our drill up to scratch, and we finished at 12 maybe, and then people went home, but I didn't. I went and had lunch, and then sort of just properly relaxed for the weekend. I didn't have any money, so it might have been just lying on my bed reading, and in the end going across to the Naffy and in the evening and watching television, which would be black and white and not very good at that.
Did you go to the cinema at all?
During the week, yes, we used to go to the cinema. We might have gone once a week to the cinema. Used to go to the pub. We had great fun most of the time.
Well, what films do you remember?
Oh, I don't remember the films, no. What was it? Magnificent Seven. I'm sure we saw that then. You tell me what films were on in the 1950s, 60s. But early in 1960 or 61, the government announced the end of national service. So I was one of the very last to go in. One or two, I suppose, another 6 months and I'd have missed it altogether. But I'm not sorry. It was a bit of a waste of time. I mean, it wasn't training like soldiers get these days, and it wasn't high tech like soldiering is now.
It was discipline, and
the discipline was there. Yes, no doubt about that.
Okay, let's talk about now Croydon and Shirley. How you remember it? What's your first memories? The earliest back you can remember, Shirley and Croydon. I mean, how was it? What did it look like?
Well, Shirley. I was born in Addiscombe, and we lived at number 13 the Lees in Shirley. I was born in 1937. My parents were married and bought the house in 1936, and that was a new house. Now I can remember playing at the back of the back of the house. We called it out the back, and that was a farmyard, but it was just crumbling, and the roof had caved in of the house, and we used to play in all the old barns and the pigsties, and we used to play in the orchard, the old orchard, and there was a row of trees We used to climb up the first tree and then go from branch to branch like a monkey all the way down the end through about half a dozen trees. And we most made camps there. And this was during the war. 1939, the war started. I'm talking now, I suppose, when I was 6 or 7. And we used to play out there. And the crowd of us from the road, I suppose the people that lived in the road, they were all or mostly newly married, they had children, they were all about our age. And we used to go and play out the back. And there was the pond there, Miller's Pond. That's all nice and tidy now in parkland. But when we were there, it was just like a farm pond. And we used to play there. We were told not to play there, but we did. I fell in once. And in the wintertime, we used to skate on that pond. Well, we didn't have skates, but we used to play on it because it was thick ice. 1947, we had a lot of very cold weather, last prolonged cold weather. And I can remember some children made one of these huge snowballs rolling it along. And a man came along and said, "Get off the ice, get off the ice." And we didn't realise why. But, of course, this huge snowball was very heavy and that was just going to cave in and maybe take children with it.
What about Central Croydon? I mean, what do you remember about the earliest you remember back there?
Now, the Central Croydon, I used to go through Croydon on my bicycle to school. The trams going through Croydon, and there were cobblestones in the road with tram lines, and it was very dangerous going on your bicycle. You had to go across the tram lines as near 90 degrees as possible, otherwise your wheel would get stuck in it and you'd be on the deck. Used to cycle into school every day. The first day at school I went by bus, and then my father said, "No, you've got to go by bus now. I can't afford to say, oh, sorry, you've got to go by bike. I can't afford you to go by bus every day." So I went by bike. I went with Ray Brummell. He lived up the road. We used to go, and then we used to meet a couple of other people sometimes. So there'd be 3 or 4 of us going from Shirley into South Croydon. We used to go, and especially in the summertime, we went up over Shirley Hills and Coombe Road and through the woods. It was a very pleasant ride. Bit tiresome after having done sport, coming home in the evening after playing rugby or doing cross-country run, and then you had a 4-mile bike ride.
And not as much traffic, obviously, as these days.
Oh, no, no. I mean, you wouldn't do it these days. There's cars, hardly any cars then. Croydon, what did I remember of the middle of it? Well, it was like a little provincial town, really. There was where the underpass is in Wellesley Road and George Street, it was just a little crossroads there with traffic lights. And where Fairfield Halls is, that used to be a railway siding, and the railway, they cleared the railway before I remember it, and it was just a huge car park. So if you imagine a big area that did have rail track on it, the rail track had been taken away and the area levelled off as a car park. It might have been the only car park in Croydon because, as you just said, there weren't many cars. And the roads were all much narrower and they weren't suitable for the large buses that you get now.
What about the shops and things that you used to go in?
The shops, well, there was Alders, there was Grant's. Grant's was a lovely old store. All the floorboards creaked. My father used to go into Croydon very often on a Saturday morning in the car, our Ford 8, and we'd park the car and then he'd go into Woolworths. He loved Woolworths because it used to have lots of nails, screws, catches, all sorts of ironmongery, and he'd fiddle around looking at those. He used to buy light bulbs there. He used to go into the electricity showrooms to pay the electricity bill, and then he'd go to the gas place to pay the gas. No such thing as debit, you know, direct debits. You just pay by check or even cash. And we used to go into what's the name of the place now? The Tools shop, Turtles. That's right, Turtles was there, and Turtles was down Crown Hill, and the Greyhound. There used to be a place called the Greyhound. It was a big pub and dance hall. It was demolished and it moved to the top into Park Lane. And then I think the name of Greyhound went altogether.
Do you remember any of the theatres?
Yes, I remember the Grand Theatre and the Davis Theatre. There was an Empire, Croydon Empire, or various other. There's Odeons, lots of cinemas. There was a classic cinema down in South Croydon. I saw Louis Armstrong at the Davis Theatre. We used to see pantomimes there, and pantomimes at the Grand as well. The Grand was like some of the old London theatres, very steep seating with balconies all the way around.
Did they do, I mean, I don't know when music halls stopped. I mean, did they do that sort of variety stuff at any of those?
No. They were cinemas, as far as I remember. No, I didn't go to them.
Didn't you ever go to Saturday morning cinema?
Oh, yes. We used to go into West Wickham for Saturday morning pictures, we call that. We used to go on the bus. That's right. I don't know how much we paid for that. Very little.
How old were you?
Probably 8 or 9. And we went into West Wickham, to the Odeon in West Wickham. It's now Sainsbury's. And then we came out of the cinema. I used to see cowboy films and Laurel and Hardy and Lou and Costello films, and then there was Mickey Mouse. Sometimes they had community singing.
Well, what songs?
10 Green Bottles, Roll Out the Barrel, all the old war songs. Yeah.
And okay, so now back at 13 the Lees,
yeah.
Just sort of describe the sort of what your living room would have looked like when you were about 8.
The living room, yes, I remember the living room. There was a 3-piece suite. I was always told off for banging the suite because the sun used to pour in there in the morning, and when I banged it, you got clouds of dust coming out. And that fascinated me. But I enjoyed the living room. It was a nice, comfortable room. It had a nice fireplace there and a fire. And crawling around on the floor was comfortable, playing with Meccano and playing with the few dinky toys I might have had.
What sort of entertainment did you make for yourselves as a family?
I'm not sure we did. What sort of entertainment. My father used to spend most of his time making things in the garage or decorating, or I suppose you call it DIY now. It wasn't called DIY in those days. He spent a long time building a room in the roof, strengthening the ceiling joists, and he made a dormer window and put that up there. He lined lots of studding with hardboard. He made a perfect job of what he did, but it was done on a shoestring, so there was no insulation, and I slept up there with my brother Andrew, and in the winter it was as cold as it is outside. And we had frost on the inside of the windows, and it was absolutely freezing. You couldn't see the windows because it was all ice, just sheet ice on it. And in the summer, it was so hot you couldn't sleep. It was really hot. And it was just a piece of hardboard and roof tiles, and then it was the outside.
Okay. So, what about the kitchen? What sort of what did the kitchen look like? I mean, was it much different from how I remember?
Well, yes, it was. There's a coke boiler in the corner, and very often that was the only heating in the house. The other heating would have been a coal fire in the living room. But we certainly during the war we had most of the time in the kitchen, because we might have been going down the shelter. If you get a bomb, what do they call it now? You got an air raid, you'd go down to the shelter, which was down at the end of the garden.
Easiest to get out to the kitchen.
Yes, but of course you don't want to heat a room up and then leave it. The boiler was all enclosed, but the fire was open, so it wouldn't be safe to leave it on its own.
Okay, and did your father have a car?
He had a car. Oh, when did he have a car? Probably 2 or 3 years after the war. It was a Ford 8, which was built before the war, and somebody had kept it throughout the war, and then it was sold, and it was quite a high price for what it was. And he kept that car for quite a while. He gave it to me eventually, and he gave it to me until I kept it until something went wrong with it, and I sold it for virtually nothing.
But he was quite sort of mechanically minded, and he things.
Pulled it apart quite a bit, yes, and he did it all his own servicing. But of course, you could service cars in those days. They were basic cars, very simple.
And was he very interested in gardens and sort of things like that?
He wasn't interested in gardens, but he kept it tidy. And in the war, he had an allotment at the back, over the back, and he grew most of our vegetables there.
And I mean, what about friends at school? I mean, what did you sort of go round to other people's houses as well?
I suppose, yes, I went to friends' houses, visited them.
And was everyone sort of living in the same sort of way as you were, or did you sort of see other people, you know, well, they've got television, we haven't, or whatever, something like that?
Yes, I remember the first television I saw belonged to Ian Uphill's family. Ian Uphill lived up the road, round the corner. And I used to go and see Muffin the Mule, and then come home again. But Ray Brummell, his parents had a television, and we used to watch, what was it? When I suppose I was at school and I was about 13 or 14, and occasionally we'd sit and watch some war film. It was about the Navy at war or something, and it was all about ships and all German ships, French ships, and all in black and white, of course.
And eventually, Grandpa built his own telly.
No, he built his own radiogram, as they called it. Yes, he built all that. But the first television he had was Christmas. Roger Gamble used to be able to borrow a television over Christmas period. And he used to bring it round so that we could watch it at Christmas time.
Well, that's half an hour of talking.
Was it?
Yes. Thank you very much. Mm. Oh, that's just that.